Hello, welcome back to Seeking Scale. Andy, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, we're doing this one earlier. Usually we have it like the end of the day on Fridays. This is a nice early Wednesday morning, but that's okay. I mean,
coffee instead of beer this week.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That would be when you would have to like do an intervention if I cracked open a beer
right
now at 8 a.m. on a Wednesday. But thankfully that's not the case, but it is another week of daycare, another cold that I'm battling. Pierce at least had a little bit of a cough, but like he's fine. It's just like I'm not, my immunity system, I guess, is not as good as a 3 months old. So getting over that, feeling a little bit better. But yeah, how are things on your end?
Things are good. Have been writing more. I guess that's like my personal update. Started a newsletter, been working on my personal website, craighewitt.me, mostly just because like I follow a lot of people that talk about just the intrinsic benefit of writing, kind of almost like meditation, you know? And yeah, I do find it to be really helpful. Yeah. So we'll be like sending out a newsletter every Saturday and writing a blog post every week just to kind of share what I'm learning, because I mean, it's cheesy, but it's honest. It's like so many people have helped me and you and everyone so much. And I hope that like this podcast helps people too, but I want to put some of that in writing just because I think it comes over better in writing, you know, interestingly. Like I think there's a way that audio is better and there's a way and a place and the topic that writing is better. And so I just haven't written anything in so long other than like marketing focused blog posts for Castos, and have played around with a couple of like side project ideas over the last few months. And was like, man, like I should invest more in me because I'm a pretty good asset, like for the company and just for myself. So yeah, it's cool. Been playing around on the site, spun up the newsletter. And it's cool. It's being well received so far. So,
do you write much like just in general, like not like essays, but I wanted to journal more. I just never stick with it. But my default when I'm brainstorming, when I'm thinking about things, is I take out a pen, grab a notebook, a pad of paper, and just like write through everything and then cross it out. And like that's how I flesh out, is just like I can do it a little bit in my head, but I need to write it down. I need to see it and then like work with it there. But is that like, do you do things like that? Or like, is writing really just like without making this more of a habit on the newsletter side, whatever else, like it's just not part of how you normally operate?
Yeah. Like I never write on paper and pencil. My default is more like notes and outlines and brainstorming, whether that's like in Notion for work. Most of my writing is there, like, you know, coordinating and helping with the team. I have started writing some blog posts for Castos, and that's cool, but I find it kind of challenging sometimes. Like the first 80% is really easy and it's the last 80% that's so hard. Yeah. So, but I take a bunch of notes and brainstorm a lot. And then it's the transition of that into like a finished thing that's been challenging.
Yeah. Well, I'll subscribe to the newsletter. I'm excited to see how that goes. And I mean, it's, I think there's obviously like value to it in a more traditional sense, but it kind of goes to what I've touched on in other episodes, really clarified a bit more, is just the figuring out your goals, like your ideal customer, what type of work do you want to do? And you can take the more numbers driven rational approach of just like, okay, where do I get the most impact? What will get us the most money? That sort of thing, the most profit. And I think in a vacuum, if there's no intentionality, like that's going to be like a decent default. But the better path is figuring out like, what do you actually enjoy doing? What do you want to do? And I think there's a lot of value to saying like, yeah, I want to do this. This is something I enjoy. I have the bandwidth to do it. Like I'm going to do it. And yeah, there was a tweet that I saw this morning, actually, right before we started recording, from James Agate. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. On Twitter, where just saying, talking about how a lot of his software partners are removing pricing details from the website. He's wondering how it impacts conversions, all that sort of thing. And this is something I think every host of like a bootstrapped or like lightly funded company podcast has like vented about, is contact us for pricing. Like that pisses me off to no end. I hate it. I always am like, why do people do that? Like I have a budget. Like I just want to know what it costs. Cause like, I don't want to have to jump through all these hoops. Like I've stretched thin, just like managing everything that's already going on. Like, I don't want to have to set up a call to then figure this out. Just to see, like, maybe it's like 10x what I'm thinking. Just like, tell me what it is. And if it's like, I've got a budget, it's reasonable. If it's in it, I'll buy it. If it's not, it's not. And that seeing the tweet kind of made me think about, like, oh, like, there's obviously a reason there. It's like, well, it makes sense. And I think it's saying, okay, there's pretty much two very big categories of potential buyers. You've got the one where it's a single person can make the decision. Like, the person who is browsing the site can put in their credit card and buy it. And then you have ones where there's like a more complicated sales process where it needs potentially approval, or there's just like contract review, or like someone else for whatever reason has to get involved on the buyer's side. And what these companies are saying is, like, they don't want the sole decision maker as a customer, because the vast majority of them are going to be small businesses who, if they're even established, are going to be tight on budget, don't have internal resources to set things up, are going to need more help, and probably going to churn everything else. And yeah, there is like a slight sliver of that that I think I like to selfishly think that I fall into for a lot of companies, where we have a reasonable budget. Like, there's plenty of, like, I'm fine spending four figures a month on a tool if it's important enough. And I'm not going to be a pain in the ass on support. Like, I'm not going to need handholding. One call, show me the ropes, like, that's it, I'm good. But that's like such a small sliver of that, where I think these sites are just saying, okay, like, we know there's some potential customers that could be okay in this bucket, but we are okay just getting rid of all of that, except for the ones who the pain is so great that even if they are sole decision maker, they're still okay getting on a call. But like, if you can't be pushed into just like, because literally all it is setting up like a 20-minute call, if that is too big of a hurdle for you to clear, you're not the right customer for them. And you definitely need to be confident in your enterprise sales ability and just like your sales ability in general to make that work. But I think it's actually like the right thing to do for those kind of businesses. Because if, again, like, if that's a huge part of sales is qualification. And that's the first step. If you can't even spend 20 minutes to talk to our guys about this, we're disqualifying you right away. And I've been thinking about our pricing plans when we roll out the pro plan for NBA about a month or so, and it was going to increase for new customers the lowest tier to make like the middle tier the clear value, which it is, but just make that obviously the clear value. But for the people who know what they need and have bigger needs, they'll still pick the highest tier. And my thinking was that bumping up the price on the lowest tier a bit will help get rid of a lot of the tire kickers, which, as an aside, I don't fully understand that metaphor. Like, I guess it's just like, I feel like, because people want to like poke around and stuff.
It has to do with
like,
car shopping.
Yeah, right? No, I know. But like, I guess, yeah, if all you're doing is kicking tires, that's pretty annoying. But some of them might buy a car. And if I can just get the ones that just kick a few times and run off and ask a few questions and never buy, that was like, okay, like, this is a decent filter for getting more of those just clear bad fits out. But the more I'm thinking about it, it's like, I think it still waters down our positioning. And if we just get rid of that, we can really lean into the fact like, no, like, this is for serious players. That doesn't necessarily mean anything about your experience level. You could be a beginner, but you're taking it seriously enough to invest. And this is the tool for serious players. Yeah. So that's like what's bouncing around in the last like 15 minutes in my head.
Yeah. No, that's super interesting. Like, total aside, back to like my like blogging and newsletter stuff, is like the idea is just exactly this, is like what's going on right now that like I have had the time to process and like want to share. And so I think that like this is really kind of apropos, because a lot of the shit that we see like in the Twitter sphere is like so polished that it's not helpful, you know, and it's the incomplete in progress stuff that we share that I think is the most valuable. So I think this is really cool. I think you're talking about two things. One is that I've never considered is not having pricing qualifies or disqualifies people just based on their buying process, not the price, right? And so like that is super interesting. Like, we have played around with having pricing and not having pricing on the production side for ongoing services and for our launch services more specifically, because we have priced that from, God, at the very, very, very beginning of Podcast Mode are $500 to $5,000 now, or $10,000. I think there is, because of what you're saying, of a person that wants to buy that is almost never the sole decision maker. Even if they are, they will go through a more proper buying process. I think that it qualifies for taking pricing out, because what, like, to me, the upside for both the customer and the company of not having pricing is you can sell different stuff, right? Like, if you have pricing on the website, it's like, this is what you get for this price. In more enterprise sales, the needs of the customer are rarely all the same. And so I think that's for the company, the benefit of like not having pricing is you can sell, you know, the Happy Meal with the fries and the milkshake to one customer and just the, you know, the milkshake to the other guy. I think like pricing and positioning on your stuff with like having only a middle tier or bumping up the price or whatever is a different thing. And like that almost goes back to like just knowing what you want, right? And like knowing what you as the business owner want to like cater to is if you want to have fewer customers, you know, in the long run, but they pay you more money and they're more serious. Yeah, I think that's a stronger business. You'll have probably less headaches to deal with. Your pricing can be a lot more solid, or your positioning can be a lot more solid, rather than we are this thing for everyone and everyone come and have fun here. But like, hey, this is the place where if you're serious about DFS, like you come and you spend money and we'll help you be successful. Your SaaS metrics undoubtedly would be like a much more like solid, especially like churn, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's like, I always feel like we don't have metrics other than what's in Profitwell. We have finally like kicked off a project to get something in place there. But I mean, for me, it's always just been like, I think people can focus too much on average metric, like metrics, aggregate metrics. And the challenge with aggregates is that they hide the tail outcomes. So like in for DFS, for sports, you can look at someone's average projection, meaning like, if this game were to be played 5,000 times, here's what they would score on average. One, they might never literally ever get that actual number. That might never be an outcome they get. If you use median, that's going to be better because it's going to pick an actual value that they could have achieved. But you can have different distributions. And if everything's normally distributed, then averages are great because the upside outcomes, the right tail, are just as likely as the equivalent downside outcomes, the left tail. And so you can make easy assumptions there. But just almost everything follows power law distribution, where a very small number of people, of outcomes, of whatever, drive a disproportionate outcome. And in baseball, that might be, yeah, there's a handful of players that on average score about the same, but one of them is just way more likely to get home runs than the other. And you would only see that if you looked at the distribution, if you isolate out those tails. And like with churn, I think I've always written off like, yeah, our churn's too high, but it's going to be high in this industry. And that's true. But I don't even have the granularity to say like, what is our churn by plan? And then like after the first month, what is our churn going forward and all of that? And I think it's like, rather than trying to just like lower the aggregate, I need to dig in more to just figure out where the biggest leverage spots are. I'm pretty confident in what I've kind of laid out, or just getting rid of that lower tier. But it's such a big decision that usually I'd still be comfortable doing it without checking this, but we're going to get the data. I want to at least have some more to back it up. And then this will just like, we'll do like a very lightweight mix panel setup. So we're getting everything pumped in a segment. It'll go into drip from there. We already, like, all the integrations we have right now are just like hard-coded directly with that sites like Drip. We have events going directly to them. And if anything else does, like, that's how we have it set up, but it just gets a pain to add any new tools. So that is one thing where...
So you're adding segment to like the tech mix?
Exactly. So everything's going to get sent to segment first, and then it'll go to a data warehouse where like we can then put Mixpanel or something on top of that, or it'll go to Intercom or wherever, like any of the other tools that we're using. So that we have like, I can get that event data consistent across the board and that we can actually like look at the numbers. So,
yeah, that's interesting. I'll be curious to hear how you like using Segment. I've heard good and bad things. I know a lot of people use it. I've heard some horror stories from superpower users. And so it'll be interesting to hear if those are kind of unfounded. I think the thing that when you're talking about like removing the bottom tier, the thing that resonates in my mind is Rob Walling saying like, is this a reversible or irreversible decision? And to me, it's like totally reversible. Just add the new one, right? And the month or two or whatever that you experimented with this is gone and you're not like totally burned.
Yeah.
So yeah, it seems like a reasonable
thing. I agree. The challenge is just with how lumpy our growth is. Like that is not evenly distributed throughout the year. And so saying, okay, we make this change now, it's absolutely easy to reverse. But is November the same as October? No. Is December the same as October? No. It's like the first month of football, first month of basketball are the two biggest months of the year. I mean, we grew about 40% last month. And yeah, like I'm not trying to extrapolate out that that growth is sustainable anytime other than a major price change or the start of a football season. But like, if we made a big mistake there, it's just way more costly than making a big mistake in July. And so that's where the side is. It's not just the reversibility, but it's like the equivalence. Like, okay, you can reverse this, but what is the actual, like, what is a real opportunity cost? Like, can you get the same? Is it just 1 month or is it the equivalent of like 6 months? What does that look like? So,
right.
That being said, like, yeah, this is where I can go down rabbit hole. So I'll try to pull back a little bit, but like, it's where you have to think about, okay, like, sure, what is the actual downside risk? Like, yes, this is going to be the second highest month of new trials that we'll get all year, potentially higher, but like second or first highest of the year. But like, of the people that this would alienate, how much is that actually costing us? Because if this was going the other direction of shifting pricing down at the risk of alienating the best customers, that's a much more expensive, potentially expensive risk because the downside is so much higher. It's so much more expensive. Whereas with this one, like if it's a mistake, yes, we can reverse it, but also it just, by the way it's structured, it just can't be that expensive because it's the lowest lifetime value segment we have.
Yeah. I'll be interested to see how it goes. Like, so as this is in progress, what like decision making or like metrics will you be looking at to say like, this is okay or not? Like, have you thought about what success looks like and how you evaluate that? Even just generally, like if you don't want to share specifics.
No, not at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, it might be helpful. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, to make the decision, I think it's basically made because I have enough it's where like, it's not necessarily arrogance, but it's confidence in my decision-making ability where like, when I can really think things through, it's like logically like, okay, like what we just talked about, like the downside's not that high. I think the benefits that would come towards our best customers dramatically outweigh any of that. And I would be blown away if we find that like the lower tier is not significantly higher churn than the higher tiers. I'll also be able to check that relatively soon. But assuming that's like that all checks out, the decision is basically made. As far as following up on it to see if it was a good decision, that's where I rely way more on my gut, and that's underselling it a bit because it's not just like, what am I feeling about this? It's like, I'll think deeply about it, but it's more, I don't have as concrete of like a measuring stick there. It would just be, yeah, I don't know. Do you have any ideas?
Yeah. No, I think your business is more challenging because you have seasonality where you can't just say, okay, September was like this, we're going to make this move in October, and by November, we'll be able to see if it was a good decision or not, because I mean, you have last NBA season, you know, say to compare it to, but that's not entirely like representative, I don't think. I mean, I think that like MRR growth. Like,
yeah. If we somehow don't grow, that would be like cause for concern. I think this is going to be one of those things where this would be done at the same time as adding the new highest tier. And so like, those are two huge changes where I don't think I'll be able to isolate them. But at the same time, it's kind of what I talk, or at least I think I talk about a decent amount, but it's, yeah, you can use metrics to be more precise, but if you have to be precise to make a decision, you're likely not debating, like neither of the options are that good, because like you should always have an option that is just like clearly better, where just by doing the light expected value calculation I talked about before of like downside versus upside and frequency and that stuff, it's just like, okay, like I don't need the exact numbers. This is just clearly way higher potential.
Yeah. Or just don't make the decision at all. Like do nothing.
Yeah. And if you don't see that, like either do nothing or don't agonize over it, because like you're deciding between two things where there's really like not that much of a difference, which I think, yeah, it's I probably like do nothing. But regardless, I feel like this is one of those things where if we add a plan that at least doubles our current highest price and we remove the lowest tier and don't see dramatic growth, then something fucked up. Like if it's just like 10% growth, then I think that's a mistake and I would need to like dig in. I expect it to be much bigger than that.
And I think just one thing I think about is we normally look at like net revenue, net MRR change. And I wouldn't in this case. I would just look at gross.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
New MRR. So I don't know if ProfitWell breaks that out. Like ChartMogul breaks all those out. And so that, right. It's a little more specific.
Yeah. And that's where, true
like,
too.
Some because of the like, noise of yeah. down, you know, can't downgrades and cancellation, all that kind of stuff, clouds.
Right. And like we have a solid metric. Customer base right now, and we expect a decent number of them to upgrade to the highest tier. And so, yeah, we wouldn't want to count that in this, but yeah. Yeah. It's where I think, like, I don't think we need to be too precise. And if we do, then that's a sign that I made a mistake.
Yeah. No, I think you're thinking about it right. Yeah. Drama. Can't wait to hear how it goes. When do you expect this to go live? You
should probably know when NBA starts. I think it's like end of October.
Okay. Yeah.
We want to have, right now it's like wrapping up the remaining things we want to put in the pro plan and then figuring out like the rollout plan and promotion for that. But I would, by the end of next month, it will be, these changes should have been made.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Super keen to hear how it goes.
Yeah, so we'll get some updates there. If anyone has any thoughts, any questions, anything at all, definitely don't hesitate to reach out. You can find me on Twitter at Andy Baldacci. Are you just at Craig Hewitt?
I'm the Craig Hewitt. Ooh, yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Nice. Or you can always email us at podcast@seekingscale.com. But thanks, Craig, and thanks everyone for listening.